Welcome to Historical Corner with Chet Wallace. Mr. Wallace is an author and historian and has published such titles as Stories of the Winecoff Fire, a dedication to the memory of the 119, about the worst hotel fire in American history, and Two Wings and a Star, the life and times of Sheriff Chester Baudouin, about his grandfather who was a hump pilot and Louisiana sheriff for 20 years. Mr. Wallace has a special interest in many historical topics and is a historian at the Edison Ford Winter Estates in Fort Myers, Florida. Join us and take a step back in time.
Hi folks, how are we doing today? I decided to start putting together another podcast of this time about my grandfather, who was a sheriff in Louisiana for 20 years, and I wrote my second book about him. The book is called Two Wings and a Star, The Life and Times of Sheriff Chester Baudouin. And yes, I am named after him. My name is Chester, although everybody knows I go by Chet. So I thought with this podcast this time that I would talk about some of my grandfather's accomplishments as a sheriff in Louisiana for 20 years. My grandfather was born in December of 1912 in the small town of Youngsville, Louisiana, which is outside of Lafayette. And the town of Lafayette is like the hub of the Cajun community in the state of Louisiana. So he was brought up learning English as well as Cajun French, so he could speak both languages fluently. As a young boy, he grew up learning about the history of flight, which during that period of time, it was the very early history. He became interested in flying as a kid. His father would put him to bed with stories of the flying aces of World War I. And that was about the only memory that he ever had of his father, because his father died in the flu epidemic in 1920 when he was about 8 years old. So this is, I asked him one time how he got interested in flying, and this is the story he had told me about his father telling him stories about the flying aces. So we're talking about Eddie Rickenbacker, the Red Baron, during that time period. He started to try to learn how to fly as a young man. And what's very interesting to me is when I was doing my interviews for the book I wrote about him, my Aunt Joyce, who was his adopted sister, told me that he learned to fly actually when he was attending high school at Lafayette High School. They apparently had taught a course of aeronautics, and the instructor had taken the students on field trips, and he would take them flying, which you obviously would never hear of today because of the liability issues. But so he graduated from Lafayette High School in 1930, pretty much learning how to fly basically. But his first job was not flying. Actually, his first job was working in the Western Union office in New Iberia, Louisiana. And later on, he decided to transfer to the Western Union office in Franklin. And this was the first time that he had ever lived in the town of Franklin, which he would live in for the rest of his life, except for a brief period when he was stationed in Texas in the early 1940s. My mother came along in 1943. Her brother, who was older than her, had been born in 1938. That was my uncle, Timothy Chester Baudouin. And she was born, actually, my mother was born in the town of Uvalde, Texas. And at the time they were building a airfield named Garner Field, which I believe is still, it still exists there. And my grandfather was first stationed in San Antonio, Texas, and he was part of the the Army Air Corps at that point in time, and he taught cadets how to fly, actually in San Antonio for a time, and then at Garner Field in Uvalde when it was completed, because at the time that he was in San Antonio in the early 40s, they were constructing Garner Field, and when it was completed, that's when my grandfather and my mother and his family, my grandmother and my uncle, moved there to live for a time. But what's interesting about that is when my mother was born and they had moved into their house in Uvalde at that point in time, he was one of the only instructors at Garner Field to actually have a house on the base. They only lived in that house for about 3 months, and they had it, they had actually paid to have it built. So they actually spent more time building the house than they actually did inside the house living in it. Before, when my mother was born, she was brought back to Franklin briefly. But my grandfather went overseas for a time in the China Burma India Theater, and he did fly gasoline to Chenault's Flying Tigers in China. And he spent about a year and a half overseas before he came back to the United States towards the end of the war. Then once he was back over here in the United States, he went from did a few different odd jobs for a time. He worked briefly as a welder, and he did actually underwater welding, which was quite an interesting job, very dangerous job. And he also did work for he did open a liquor store in downtown Franklin for a time. And then he had no interest at that point in time in becoming a law enforcement officer at all. In fact, he told me one time that his family went he had no he would get in trouble frequently when he was a kid, so he really had no interest in it. And his family ended up thinking that he would end up in a reform school anyways. But when he was working, owning this liquor store, he had a couple friends in town by the name of Kenneth Wright and Clarence Acock, who would later become a lieutenant governor of Louisiana in the 60s and was one of my grandfather's best friends as well. They came by to see him because my grandfather, his mother-in-law, my grandmother's mother, owned a bakery. Her name was, my great-grandmother's name was Una Shunstein, and she owned Shunstein's Bakery in Franklin. And she was pretty popular in the town. She was a member of the local Catholic church there. And candidates who was running for sheriff that particular year, this would have been about 1952, was a man by the name of Buck Shaw, or actually his name was John Buckshaw. And he decides to approach my grandfather through these two friends of his to see if he could get a link to the Shunstein family, because that would get him more votes and would win him the sheriff's election for 1952. So that's it. Shaw decided to hire my grandfather as a deputy at first, and he actually was hired in early 1952. And it went through the basic training that they go through, and by the time 1954 comes along, my grandfather is already a chief deputy under Sheriff Shaw. Now, it was around this time that my grandfather comes up with a brand new idea that is still used today, to the present day in law enforcement, and that is the barrier that separates the front and back seat of a patrol car. He invents this in mid-1950s. It originally was an iron cage that would separate the front and the back seat. And my uncle Mac, his actual name was John McClernand, who was my Aunt Beverly's husband at the time. My Aunt Beverly was my grandmother's sister. They come up with this idea, and my uncle Mac pretty much kind of works on designing it and actually working with the local ironworks company in Franklin to actually install it. And my mother was one of the first guinea pigs of this contraption. There was a trip that my grandparents and my mother made from Louisiana to Miami to go to a convention. And my mother sat in the back seat and she tried to escape from this cage and she was not successful. What was interesting is she always told this story about when they were driving through these small towns in the southern United States to get to Miami, that people were looking in the windows because they'd never seen this before and they were wondering why this little girl was caged up in the back seat of this car. So it's an interesting story, but today, to the present day, patrol cars still use a barrier of this sort to keep a prisoner from subduing a driver or somebody in the front seat. But nowadays, they're not made of iron anymore. They're probably, I guess, they're made more of plexiglass. But another thing that during this time period, my grandfather incorporated into the Sheriff's Department in St. Mary Parish was the use of a seaplane. I believe, honestly, that my grandfather was probably one of the first sheriffs or sheriff's departments in the nation to actually use a seaplane for search and rescue. Now, he had seaplanes back in the 1950s when he was still chief deputy. So, even though he was a chief deputy under Buck Shaw, he came up with a lot of the ideas even before he would become sheriff in 1964. Now, Buck Shaw would pass away. He would die in office actually in 1963. This is when my grandfather was still chief deputy. And then there was a special election that was held. This was during the time of the governorship of Louisiana Governor Jimmy Davis, who was a lot of people know more so as a country singer than a governor. But anyways, it was under him that a special election was held in St. Mary Parish to fulfill the remaining time of this of Shaw's term. So actually his wife Camille Shaw decides to run for sheriff and fill out her husband's term. And she wins and she is sheriff for a short amount of time through most of 1963 and 64 until my grandfather runs for sheriff in 64 and he wins at the end of that year. And he is sheriff from 1964 all the way to when he retires in 1984. Now, another accomplishment of his during this time period, I think, is the fact that he was president of an international organization that fought drug trafficking and other things related to drugs, called the, for short, the INEOA, which actually stands for the International Narcotics Enforcement Officers Association. He was president of that association for 1 year in 1973. He had been vice president of that association the year before in 1972. And then he would be a member of that organization going back to the early 60s, and he was a member all the way to the time that he had passed away in July of 2003. And many of the trips that I went on as a kid with my family had to do with conferences. For instance, we went to one conference in Hawaii in 1979, and I always remember it as just a vacation, but it actually was a conference where my grandfather had to attend meetings and give speeches and things of that sort. But so a little bit later on in the early 80s, we went to Cancun, Mexico, and that was for another convention. I'm not sure if it was the INEOA, but my grandfather would attend sheriff's conventions as well. So I remember going to Cancun as a young boy also. So it was interesting that we would get to go on these trips to visit different places. I think these are some of the more important accomplishments of my grandfather. And just to give you a little history about after he retired in 1984, and he did pretty much stayed at home, enjoyed his family. He would come to visit. I live in Fort Myers, Florida. He would come to visit along with my grandmother, come to visit once a year in Fort Myers for Thanksgiving. And even when my grandmother passed away in 1998, he would still come for the remaining years that he was living to visit as well. But there was a brief period where he did run for sheriff again in 1992, but he did lose the election that particular time, mainly because of his opponent by the name of Huey Bourgeois, was in all political races, they always try to dig up things, and the only thing really that Bourgeois could say about my grandfather was that he was too far up in age to hold the office. But my grandfather was very, he was in very good health at that point in time, so it wouldn't have been any problem if he had won the seat to run the sheriff's department for the next 4 years. But unfortunately, he did lose the election that year. Like I said, my grandmother died in 1998, and he would still come to visit here in Fort Myers for Thanksgiving. And he died in July of 2003. And latter years of his life, I asked him a lot of questions over the years about when he was young or about his parents or whatever, family history. And luckily, I was able to record some of his conversations. And then, what I decided to do, I started working on the book about my grandfather. It was in the early 2010s. I had these recordings of him talking about different cases or how him and my grandmother got married, things of this sort. So I took those recordings, I interviewed my mother and relatives, also co-workers that worked with him. Let's see, Duval author. I interviewed Huey Bourgeois at one point. I interviewed one of his secretaries, Laura Bell Trahan. And I also took all these old binders that I had of clippings of the sheriff's department for pretty much every year he was in office from 64 to 84. And using all those different sources, I was able to write a biography about my grandfather. And I've written two books. My first book was about the worst hotel fire in U.S. history, called the Wine Cough Hotel, which occurred in downtown Atlanta in 1946. And then my second book was my grandfather's book, Two Wings and a Star. And most people always who had read both books said that actually the better book was the second book about my grandfather. And then most of them said it was because it was more personal, which I tend to agree. And also at that point in time, I'd written my second book, and I was more of a seasoned author at that point in time. So I think my writing was better with my second book than my first. So I hope you enjoyed this podcast talking about my grandfather. And at some point in the future, I plan to maybe do another podcast about him, but from maybe a different perspective, maybe more of a family perspective. But hope you enjoyed the podcast and look forward to doing the next one.
Thanks for joining us for Historical Corner with Chet Wallace. We hope you'll join us next time for more fascinating historical perspectives. Keep up with Mr. Wallace at www.thechetwallace.com.